kind of freaking out about it. You're an attorney? You don't have a pen?
I'm not really.
I just installed these recently.
I don't know. They do. The governance is excused.
How come I didn't install them?
They seem a little new.
Yeah, they seem a little mobile.
I wish we had chairs like this in the chamber.
You can put it in when you get the green chair. Never.
You have that kind of room.
Yeah, these are more comfortable.
Yeah, 6:30.
All right, we'll begin our meeting with call to order.
Yeah.
Win, Jeff.
Have any citizen comments? Anyone? Citizen comments? All right, seeing none. I have no reports to any committee members. All right, next item is the approval of the February 4 and 13 minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion, corrections? Seeing that all those in favor say
aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right, they approved. County executive appointment for the library system board. Who is going to present that? All right.
Good evening. This evening we have...
Hello, Michelle.
This evening I'm
third, yeah. Now you can sure take me anywhere.
You approve the appointment of Michelle Milosevic to the Kenosha County Library System Board. Since her last appointment in 2018, she's attended 6 of the 7 meetings held. She will be succeeding herself. She's a teacher at Tremper High School and looks forward to hopefully continue.
Did you say Tremper? Move to approve.
Second.
Discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, thank you. Public Works, Parks Director Resolution on a grant.
Thank you, Chairman Rose, and members of the Finance Committee.
What happened to this? Is that number seven?
We skipped.
What happened to seven?
That's one we're on right now.
No, you said Parks.
Yep.
Public
this
Works.
Was the one that got added yesterday.
That's what happened.
It changed.
I see. All right.
Mine doesn't have that either, Terry, so you're excused for that.
It was the last minute.
Well, this is corporate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's number seven.
Somehow.
All right. Yeah. Jim, you're up, so we'll take you out.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know the one I have had me, but that I'll do whatever you
right.
folks want me to do.
Yours is actually 8 on the new agenda. Go ahead.
Okay, this is a resolution to authorize the Parks Director to apply for a $1,005,456 grant, which the county, if given this grant and if approved in a future budget, would have to pay for half of it, or about $507,000. So, but we have to go through this process of getting it approved here just so we can apply for it.
Why don't you explain that that's a lot of money to just
stamp
without any knowledge?
Katy Park, there's a long-term project there. This $1 million would be used to build a new parkway, a road, going from the west entrance to some of the new amenities that they have built in the west side of the park, and to also build some more trails. An estimated cost for that is about $1 million.
And what's there now?
Nothing.
So how does one get to these things now? Just walk?
They're not there. We will construct the road and construct the bike trails using this $1 million.
So there's no entrance from the west.
They're just putting in.
Okay, so down. Down. Been there.
There isn't.
John,
are we on number 8?
Yeah.
You talking about Petrifying Springs?
No.
Katy Park.
This one says.
Yeah. Yeah.
This one says. I got number 9 is the Memorial Park.
We're talking about the Katy, the Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park.
Right.
Yeah, that was 9 actually.
So where are we on, 6, 7, 8, or 9?
We jumped to one of them.
He's speaking to number 9.
Number 9.
So, the proposal is to apply for...
To apply for that grant, yes.
Which is tantamount to saying, yes, we will spend $500,000 plus.
We can't, the $500,000 is not in the budget yet.
I move we approve it.
No, I understand that.
Yes, if approved, and if that we apply for this grant, and they say, yes, we're gonna give Kenosha County $1 million, we have to spend $500,000, but we need the board's approval to spend that $500,000. That's a future action.
Discussion?
I'll second it.
Well, I think you had a movement already.
I moved it.
Yeah, there was a motion.
Moved and seconded?
Yeah.
Any further? Apply for the grant? Jeff?
Yeah. That's a lot of money. That's $500,000. And this is not in our budget at all?
No.
We're improving pets, and we're getting $500,000 to help do it.
So this would be in the next budget, not this?
Yes, the next budget.
Then it's going in the budget, and nothing happened.
What? No, this is not in a budget yet. If we got it, it would have to be in a budget, but I mean, we're authorizing $500,000 plus of spending.
No, if we got it, it doesn't have to be in the budget. You have to decide whether or not it goes into the budget. But we can't even be eligible to receive $1 million unless...
So we're asking for the whole $1 million?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought you said there was $500,000 we were having...
I'm sorry, the cost of the project is $1 million. We spent $1 million.
Right.
We spent $500,000 and the grant is $500,000.
Yeah.
Yes.
Half and half.
Yeah, so I don't even have heartburn about what budget it goes in. I have heartburn about spending $500,000.
Go ahead.
What we're doing is applying for it, okay? If we get it, then we can make a decision whether we want to, but we got to get it first. And then you can decide whether you want to spend the
other $500,000. We do this all the time.
Because we got to get that done in that park anyway. So if we got to get a chance to get $500,000 toward that $1 million, we got to try to get it. And if we get it, then you can still make a decision if you don't want to do it, all right?
Right.
So if you're given the $500,000 plus, and we vote no on $500,000.
You're giving the grant
go away.
Yeah, there is nothing.
We can't lose.
Yeah. There is no grant.
Yeah. Because we have
no project.
We're not committed.
Correct.
Correct.
We're not.
All right, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
At least then I have a kick at it later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks, Ed.
Further discussion? Anyone? Yes, sir.
Yeah. What road will that be coming in on?
I think it's
from the west side.
It's either coming off of F or the other road that goes north from there. I think it's F, though. The new redone F.
Now how many miles of bike trails is proposed?
Oh, gosh.
Any rough ballpark? That's okay.
I don't know.
Exactly. I'm just curious.
I'd say a lot, but that wouldn't sound right. But I guess I'd say
Further discussion?
Remember that question.
All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye, approved.
So now we're going back to 7, right?
Correct. Springs.
Yes, this is a resolution.
No.
This is going to be 8.
We're going to 8.
Yeah, it's number 8.
It's 8, since he is here and he's presenting.
Yeah.
And we'll go to John Mayer afterwards.
Oh, okay, so we're going to 8. I can go back to 8, I can get that wrong.
I have the wrong jacket. My sorry.
Please, really.
Something was flip-flops since the last time I looked at this. Okay, this grant is to seek funding.
Full name, Jerry. Close enough.
$150,000, and the county has to pay half of it, $75,000, for a grant to be used in... To do the second section, phase 2 of the Pike River. This is a three-pronged project. We've already completed phase 1. Phase 2 is this money will go as a part of phase 2. We actually have the money in the budget to do this part of the project. But we still need approval. The DNR needs your approval before they will give us the funding.
We'll do it first.
Second.
discussion? Everybody explain what the part two is.
The Pike River meanders through Pets, and it's three sections. This is the middle section, the second section. I think it's 1,300 or 3,100 feet. So they go in and they redo all the stream banks to improve the water flow, which improves the wildlife and the fish and the birds. And it's
helps
the same thing we did
migratory birds.
Probably, yeah.
Well, maintain bird status.
Yeah. All right, further discussion on this? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry for the confusion on the order there.
All right, let's go back to number seven. Corporation Council, John.
Thank you, good evening. And I apologize, I'll confess that I'm the reason that there's confusion about the order of things, because this one had to go really fast. It had to come on quickly because of the statute that requires a real quick reaction. Essentially, I'll try to give you the thumbnail sketch, but an individual who pays their taxes and then their taxes get lost in the mail or there's a postal service delay has a remedy in the statute to come before the county board and ask that it be that the interest and penalties that might accrue subsequent to that due to the postal delay be forgiven. In this case, an individual, a taxpayer who happens to have, I believe, three different parcels in Kenosha County is making that request. I think maybe you've all gotten something by email about the situation, but I'll try to give a quick summary. This individual is out of the country, actually, on some business, and they were having their father-in-law pay their taxes on these parcels, and he's asserting, this fellow from out of the country, the owner of the property, is asserting that they were all paid, the three different parcels were paid. Two of the payments were received on two properties in the city of Kenosha, but the one for Summers was not received. And consequently, a notice went to the owner in March that he now owed, he didn't make his payment, he now owes interest and penalty on that. Just so you know, the amount of that interest and penalty is, I believe, $231.37.
You're absolutely right.
And he's stating that his father-in-law mailed these checks together, that he doesn't know what happened to it. He checked on with his bank. It was not cashed, and he canceled the check. He did make a full payment of the entire amount of the taxes, $7,943.76. He made that payment after he verified that the check was not cashed. I think it was March 11th. So that includes the penalties and interest, but he's asking that this body or the county board ultimately return the interest and penalties of $231.37. I don't know if you need more details about any of that. We don't have, and this is what concerns the treasurer about doing this. The treasurer's office is uncomfortable with this type of proof or this level of proof in this kind of a situation, because the practice has been to require one of the following: an explanatory letter from the post office about something that happened, maybe a machine ate the letter, it was lost, if they know that it was lost, a returned letter clearly indicating and showing a postmark, showing that it was timely and that it was returned for whatever reason, or some kind of a missing mail inquiry that can be done that might take some time. So the treasurer wanted me to indicate that that is what is normally required to reverse this kind of a charge. And if this committee and board ultimately pass the resolution, the treasurer's office would like some kind of a roadmap on the standard it should apply across the board in these situations. In other words, what level of proof is required? Is it evidence from the responsible party like we've got here saying he paid it, it wasn't, you know, this is what happened, this is why it wasn't paid, relying on that, or, as we've done in the past, something from the post office from sort of an independent or third party? So that's the extent of it. If you have questions, I'll try and answer them.
Fine.
Okay. You said he had parcels in the city and parcels in Summers. Okay. So the check was mailed to the city for the city parcels, right?
Right.
And he said that his relatives mailed the check to Summers for the Summers part, because this hasn't been turned over to anybody yet. It's still at the local level, Summers and the city, right?
Yes.
So, does he have any evidence that that check, a canceled check or something, or that was written, or because you're paying two different taxing bodies here, right?
Correct.
So the city got theirs, but Summers didn't get theirs.
Yes.
And right now it's sitting at Summers. He said he paid that now.
Yes.
He wants a refund.
He paid Summers, but what he provided was, he provided several things. He provided a couple of like screenshots from a text where he's telling, I guess, his father-in-law, Pete, to
I'm looking at that, but I can't read it.
Yeah, I know. And then he sent these very, very fuzzy images, one of which purports to be the check. And you can sort of make out Summers on the top of the envelope.
Yep.
And, you know, it looks like around January 3rd, maybe for a date. But, you know, that's him saying that. I guess the concern of the treasurer is that people drive to the post office and it goes down in between the seats or under your feet or blows out the window or something. And then, you know, that they're not paying their taxes timely, but it's not necessarily their fault, but, you know, it gets lost. So, again, the statute is that when there's a postal delay, and that's what the statute does require, a late payment from a postal delay, you can forgive the interest and penalties. That's what the property owner is seeking here.
Did the check ever show up?
No, it never showed up, and it was, again, he called his bank and canceled it, you know, or said don't pay on it now, but it has not turned up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, the most proof is that two others were paid when they should have. I mean, if this was coming in flying solo and he's just saying, hey, they lost it in the mail, I get it. But I don't know anybody who makes two payments and stops before making a third. And to ask for the post office to find something they lose, I mean, I don't get that. I mean, they're more likely to lose something than something blow out the window. So, I mean, to me, I can understand forgiving this, and I think it should be based on the preponderance of evidence that the person provides, which, I mean, obviously, I tend to believe this, because two others were paid, and he's got this information. So, I mean, to me, that seems like he did his thing. So, that's my opinion.
Discussion?
I got one more point.
Yes.
Summers Town Chairman is the one, treasurer's the one that's objecting to forgiving this, right?
Tim Kitzman?
Summers Treasurer is the one that's resisting giving him this money, right? You said the local treasurer, but it can't be our treasurer because she hasn't got it yet.
Well, but our treasurer is the one who he's been communicating with, and that brought this to my attention. And she's the one that's concerned, I think, about what process we're going to use and how we're going to, you know, be uniform in figuring out.
But he didn't do it himself. He had a relative do it because he was out of
his country. That's right. His father-in-law. Yes. The other thing, the treasurer did tell me that if he was not granted the forgiveness on this, and the thing showed up later, in other words, if the check showed up later, he can always come back and they'll refund it. But he's seeking a decision now. He paid it, including that interest and penalty, so he'd be seeking a refund out of what he paid.
So we have nothing from the post office, huh?
We have nothing.
We have no crumpled up letter showing that that was returned for whatever, no stamp or something.
We don't.
But the only thing we have is his request saying that he mailed it and it wasn't received.
Right. And two other things that he mailed supposedly at the same time were received.
He's not been delinquent. He's been paying on time. His records show that there hasn't been. I'm not aware of a delinquency. I looked at the payments on the Summers property, and it's current. So I don't know of a delay here. I don't know of a prior problem.
Well, why aren't you responsible for getting your own taxes there on time, though?
Well, if you mail it, I suppose you did it.
Summers would be willing to give him his money back if the check does show up and all that sort of thing, correct, for the penalty?
That's my understanding. Normally, you know, they're not going to say if it turns up later, a month later, that they're suddenly not going to do it. But this statute requires that if he's going to make a request like this, he has to do so and has to be decided within 30 days of the request, which was made a couple days ago.
So what is that top envelope? I couldn't make that out. Was that the one who supposedly mailed it out of, or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, the image that he sent, again, it's not very clear.
Well, that doesn't even have a postmark on that stamp right there, as far as I can see.
Seems like awfully convenient that I took a picture of something.
Yeah, that was the part that I wanted.
The stamp was there, but there's no postmark on it, so that thing never reached the postmark. So for me, just looking at this particular evidence, I can't support giving this money back, because I don't even think that went to the post office.
Who takes a picture of the letter before they mail it?
That's what it says, January 4th, he's got this lineup of an envelope, and maybe before he sent it out, I don't know, it says on the bottom, mail today, I'll look through my paperwork again.
Kind of smells.
I don't know.
What's your pleasure? I think you either move to approve or move to disapprove.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
Well, I think that's what somebody's got to do.
I move. On the basis of the, you want
to? Yeah, I'll move to give it back to him. Based on the fact that the two others came in and he pays his taxes on time, he doesn't have any other delinquencies, and we can set up a policy for the clerk's office. That's my motion.
I'll second it.
Okay, so but they want an explanation then if we approve this, correct?
The treasurer's office would like some sort of standard, and you know, what would be the standard? In other words, normally we've required something from the post office. In this instance, we're not. And basically what I'm hearing is, you know, on a case-by-case basis, in a situation like this, this is unusual. He's got three properties. So, you know, maybe that's not going to happen again, but where they have other timely payments. I don't know what the standard would be, but she wants some kind of a direction, I guess, from committee/board about if we're not going to require something from the post office on proof under the statute, what...
But we may not have.
We're never going to get it.
We may not be able to provide that because we may be looking at this on a case by case basis.
Right.
And so how do we provide that? Because there's circumstances that look like he's probably telling the truth, and that did happen. But like to Ed's point, okay, you know, there's no postmarks and
never went to the post office.
But what I'm saying is the evidence they're providing doesn't really help.
No.
Based on
how many cases have we had of
policy?
I've never dealt with one, and I don't know how often this comes up.
I was treasurer 6 years, and I never had one.
You never had one?
No. I believe you're telling the truth, too. Why wouldn't you?
Did he ever say why he took a picture of this envelope before sending it? Does he have a picture of
it? That's the part that's all. I never take a picture of my taxes before I send it out. I'll just be honest about it.
Very sloppy.
Do you ask your father-in-law to make payments? Because then I don't know.
All right. Any other discussion?
I get automatic payments, so I don't worry about it.
Anyone else here?
No. I'm ready to vote on this.
All right. Do you want to have a roll call on this?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No. Passes.
Okay. I don't know who does it, so it's whatever. Sorry about that, my friend.
Now, I'm going to have to explain this one, right?
Yep. I'll be consistent. I always go. You got the floor, Ronnie.
All right, very good. Then we'll move on to information technology.
I'll be working on it.
Cybersecurity presentation.
Where are we now? Information technology. And John keeps bringing weird stuff.
It's going to be fun.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Wanted to give a little bit of an update on cybersecurity. Until probably the last 3 or 4 weeks, one of the biggest things that you've seen is issues related to malware affecting different organizations. While we thought we were doing a very good job protecting the county, and we still do think that, the number of occurrences or incidents became closer and closer. So as you're probably aware that the city of Racine was impacted or affected by malware, which actually shut down all their computer systems. They could not conduct business, probably for a period of 2 to 3 weeks, and I think they're still impacted. So what we wanted to do is kind of give you an update as far as what we've been working on in the past a little bit, as well as the additional steps that we're taking in light of this recent outbreak of the virus that's affecting computer systems. Mm.
I just want to add through the chair.
Yeah, sorry.
How did they get in there? Just one of the computers in one of the departments, or did they come in through a county board supervisor?
It is believed that it was access, and Sean's going to talk a little bit more about this, but access was really compromised through a phishing email.
Okay.
So somebody clicked on a link, somebody received an email, said, you know, you need to validate your credentials or do something like this, which is, you know, a bad actor out there representing themselves as somebody else. And with that, they were able to access the city's network. And once they had access to the network, they were able to deploy malware that affected all the systems. So we certainly have been doing a lot of work. As you know, 2 years ago, we started the training and education program on virus and awareness, overall cybersecurity awareness, which has been very good. But we wanted to kind of give you an update as far as where we stand and where we're going. And reassure you that we have not been complacent in our activities, and we're actually out there aggressively doing things in the background on technology that's better protecting the county. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sean.
Thank you. And I'm pretty sure that it came through a phishing email sent to a county board supervisor who wouldn't finish his cybersecurity training. I'm pretty sure.
See, that's what I thought. That is exactly what I thought.
You know, it's terrible when these things happen. So one of the things
that
we frequently talk about anytime you're talking about security, especially cybersecurity, is it's a journey. You're never done. You're always going down the road. You're looking for what has to be done next. So this one of the things that's most important to understand is we've done a lot of really terrific things. The county, I feel, is in a really good position overall. Doesn't mean that there's not more to do, though. So we're constantly working to improve what it is we're working toward. Cybersecurity at Kenosha County, one of the things we wanted to really highlight is what are the assets that are most at risk. When you look at what we have and what we're trying to protect, obviously everything we have we want to protect. But there are certain areas where we have greater risk than others. And if you look at this, you've got election systems, payment systems, financial, HIPAA, resident, critical assets, servers and data. All of these things are the juiciest targets for the hackers. You know, anyone who's a bad actor and wants access to what we have, this is typically what they're after the most. So if you think about an election system, one of the things that an election system presents a challenge is that's something that we will see really high volume for a short period. It's very seasonal. Whereas something like our normal, you know, HIPAA data, that's something that is more of a steady threat. There's always somebody trying to access that, get that information, PHI. So you really have to build your defenses to be able to address those seasonal threats, the mass amount of attacks that can come in election system, while also maintaining the ongoing ability to protect against that persistent threat like HIPAA or PHI. So when we do build our defenses, those are the things that we really look at and consider. When you think about how to address cybersecurity, we kind of grouped it into three key activities. The first that we always want to make sure everyone understands, proactive. We assess what we have, we develop strategies to prevent threats, to prevent access. We try to make sure everyone has great security awareness. Marty, I already talked about it a little bit, but that security awareness training program that we started a couple years ago, it's easily been one of the most effective safeguards we've implemented at the county, because the number of people that gained an awareness and learned, so you don't see it as much because you're not on some of the regular computers we have, but they have a fish alert button. So if someone suspects, hey, this email looks fishy, it sounds so silly, but all they have to do is click a button and it sends that email to a team that can look at it, evaluate it, make sure that it is what it's either legitimate or it might be a phishing email.
How often do we do that?
Well, that fish alert, it's available all the time.
No, but I mean, how often we had to do it. For the record, I did complete that, just so you know.
You did.
But anyway, that should happen every couple of years. As a mandatory thing rather than just having it available.
So for the security training, what we've done over the last couple of years, and it's grown. So when we first did it, we just did the one annual and we tried to do another set quarterly. So the annual one is mandatory. If people don't complete the annual training, we disable their access. So the first year that was the idea, but it was hard to take that first step. The second year, we started turning off people's access and they started freaking out. And it was a very small number, but you know, you get people's attention that way. And amazingly, the training was done that day. Yeah. So, but we send out the phishing tests. But really what we did is, one of the people on staff, Janae Townsend, you guys have heard from Janae about the delinquent tax. She's the one who kind of runs that program, and she created monthly themes. So every month there is a different theme: home, personal security, financial security, and it really helped to create a really nice training program for people so that they could frame it and understand what was going on.
So she's ongoing phishing us.
Yes, absolutely.
Very good, very good.
We run phishing campaigns, and we've seen, like as no before predicted, we've seen a pretty steady decline. And the campaigns get more sophisticated. The first one that went out, it looked like a phishing email. And it went out to 1,100 people at once. So everyone said, what's this? What's this? You know, word travels fast. But then the next time we send it out, maybe it sends out a variety of emails over 5 days that all look different, have different information, and they attempt to try and get you to do different things. So all it's trying to do is they have clear markers of this isn't real, but it helps because people really learn.
So the results, the first one that was easy, over 20% of the people clicked on it. They failed the test because they took the bait and they did something. So then everybody took training and got a better understanding. The next time, the next baseline that we ran, we saw definite improvement, and I think the last time we saw it, we were down around 8% as far as the number of people who failed. Now, if you fail a test, if you fail a phishing test, you have to go back and retake the training. That's mandatory within 30 days. You have to spend more time, think about it a little bit more. So it's been very effective.
Let's not publish those results of failing.
We're better than most. We are better than most.
No, I mean with mine.
Oh,
yeah, everybody.
And then as far as proactive, it's creating policy, appropriate policy. We brought a couple policies to you last year. We're working to bring some more to you later this year. The policy is really what builds the structure for us to stand on when we need to do something that maybe is unpopular or just needs to be taken care of. So then there's responsive. We have to, regardless of how hard we try, there's things that get through. And so we just have to be responsive. We have to mitigate the threats, and we need to treat and triage. And then the last one is very much reactionary. What we do after the incident has been taken care of. We have to do a root cause to figure out how did it get in. Was it a threat that we have to close? We remediate it. We make sure that it didn't spread anywhere else. And then there's forensics. Sometimes we have to find out more about how that came in, what might have been going on, dig a little deeper. So that's usually how we approach it, but it requires all of them to be successful. We have to be ready to do them all. So just talk a little bit about trending threats. We have a few things I want to cover. Account compromises. This is without a doubt, one of the most dangerous threats that we face. When you receive those phishing emails that we send as a test, all they are is what they already see other people doing. If you give up your credentials to something that looks completely legitimate, a person that has access to log into your account and the number of things they could theoretically do with that could be significant. It gives them a valid ID to log on to our network if they... Now, most of the time, they're just trying to log into your webmail so that they can do bad things that way, but it's a very real threat. Malware, we'll talk a little bit about it with what happened in a couple of other areas, but that malware can get in, and just to give you an idea, sometimes malware gets in and it encrypts your computer and you lost complete access to it. Sometimes it gets on your computer and it just sits there and you don't even know it's there, and it's logging everything that you enter, so it gets your bank password, it gets your social security number, anything that you've typed in there. So it's important to protect against those. One of the biggest malware threats that's out there is Emotet, is what it's called, and it's specifically called a banking Trojan because that's what it does. It targets your financial information. It's constructed in a way to attack that information. And ultimately, phishing. We talk about phishing all the time. This is one of the most common ways, not only to get people to give their account information, but also to spread malware. So those are the kind of the biggest threats that are out there. There's a lot more, but those are three that we're seeing really at the top. So a couple recent incidents. Marty already mentioned these, but the city of Racine and the city of Oshkosh both experienced a significant malware event where their data was encrypted. So I don't know if you remember when it happened to Atlanta. You heard about, you know, Atlanta's huge, and they got compromised, and it took them a long time. But it happens everywhere. Both Racine and Oshkosh, within a few days of one another, both saw a similar event where all of their data was encrypted. Now, just to give you an idea of what that means, if you have your individual computer and it gets encrypted, what that means is all of your data is inaccessible, and depending on how bad it is, the entire computer just shuts down and it doesn't work anymore. You'd have to completely reformat it, and everything on that computer, all the data is lost. Now imagine that on all of your servers, where all of your sensitive data is held, where all of your most important information is, and that's what they experienced. And it, you know, each of them have information, they're not sharing everything, but it's suspected that both of these came in through phishing emails where a person clicked on a link, downloaded the software. As soon as it gets onto a computer, these things propagate quickly. So Racine, and this is information that was just published in those links if you want to read more information. More than 700 computers have been affected. And what that really means, no, we don't need to know. Thank you, though. More than 700 computers, that means they had to go get those 700 computers, bring them back, install the operating system, all the applications, and set up the users for all 700 people, not to mention all the servers that they had to restore as well. The work that it takes to get that done is massive. If you think about it, restoring a computer in that way, depending on how complicated it is and the tools that you have, 2 to 8 hours. You know, sometimes a computer has a huge number of applications. If we look at some of our more complicated computers, there's so many applications we have to install. So that kind of work is massive and it has a huge financial impact. Even if you're not paying a ransom, the impact of lost work, lost hours, the time spent, it is huge. So even when these people don't try and get you to pay them, and in specific with Oshkosh, there was no ransom request at all. It was just someone who wanted to give everyone a really bad day. So
we know for the city of Racine, their website was down, their voicemail was down, their email was down. Plus then certainly all their back office applications. How do you register a deed? How do you you know, pay your bill to the treasurer, those type of things. It just, you know, everything ground to a halt. So.
So we talked a little bit about the road already traveled. I don't want to bore you with everything here. This is just to highlight some of the things that we've already done. We all have, I don't know if you're familiar with the term COOP-COG, that's our continuity of operations. That's something that we do to help make sure that everyone has thought about how do you keep moving if something does happen. And what we're dealing with now is a great example of why you start to make those plans. You know, with everything going on with COVID and how do you handle it, how do you deal with these things. We've got a terrific server infrastructure. The county has invested very well in making sure that we're running terrific. So over in the public safety building is our primary data center, and then in the county center, we also have another smaller data center. So that data is replicated between the two, and if we failed here for some reason, something happened to that building, we're able to keep running out of the county center. That is a huge deal for us. So some of the other areas, processes, we make sure that our computers stay updated and online. We have the user awareness training. We've already talked enough about that. Some of the standard practices, so if something did happen and we lost, it encrypted all of our computers, we have standard practices so that we can restore those computers quickly, so that it's not trying to figure it out as we go. We're able to start restoring them very quickly. Application of industry best practices. We stay very in tune with what's happening in the industry, and we make sure that we're applying the things that make sense for us here. Active participation in intergovernmental security groups. I don't know if you've ever heard of the state CRT, it's the Cyber Response Team. So the state has organized, there's 70 volunteers across the state that receive training in cyber response, and if someone does suffer some kind of incident, like Oshkosh or we've seen experience, that team is ready to go and help them. If it means analyzing what's going on and helping to figure out how the threat came in, or if it's the team is helping them reimage computers. So we participate in that. We've worked with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, so we help work with them to set standards for security, not only for us, but also for others across the state. So another area is the data encryption and protection. Computers that we give to people that have sensitive information, specifically laptops, those get encrypted so that if a laptop is stolen or lost, someone can't just go into there and collect that information. That's encrypted and someone can't get access to it.
Sean?
Did
Oshkosh and Racine talk to the Madison people then?
Oshkosh talked to the CRT and Racine did not. We don't know why Racine did, but I don't assume that it was anything other than maybe it's possible that their cybersecurity, their insurance, maybe they were covering the expenses and they didn't want a third party in there, maybe working contrary to what their team would do. We don't know. But I do know that they weren't working with the CRT, but Oshkosh did. So, and Oshkosh was mostly online within 3 to 4 weeks because of some of the help they got.
From that point of view, if something happened here, would you have them be involved in it possibly?
Yes.
From the get-go or from an educational standpoint, if nothing else?
We would get them involved. Like I said, even if all they do is come out and help us get back online, they're not doing the forensic work, because that forensic work, that kind of work does take some real high specialization. But even if they're just here to help us get computers deployed, we would take their help, because that does come for free. They're not charging you for that. So so we want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do moving to the future. First and foremost, we have a current vacant FTE slot. What we want to do is convert that. It's currently listed as a data architect, and we want to convert that to a security position. The position has been vacant for a little while. But we think that right now, given everything that's going on, it's the best use of that resource. There is no budgetary impact to that, so we just wanted to make sure you knew that was what the plan would be moving forward. That's something that we will look to start recruiting for immediately, because that's an important position, and it puts us at the front of the pack as far as what we're able to do. So some of the other things on there, application of industry standards, we will continue to work and apply some of the new technologies that come out, whatever else is happening there. Policy and more policy. Like I said, we want to bring more policy to you later this year. When we do bring that policy, it's just designed to help give us the framework that we can work within to manage the environment appropriately. And then one other thing is proactive threat monitoring and management. It's a lot of words, but really what it means is we'll be installing something that actively monitors our network. And there's an organization, it's the MSISAC, they're funded by DHS, the federal DHS, Homeland Security. So what they do, their mission is just to help state and municipal governments be more secure. That is their sole mission. So they've created, it's a sensor that you put into your network, and it constantly monitors the kind of activity, because malware acts in a certain way. So it's able to identify some of those trends, and they have a 24/7 security operations center that they monitor that. If they get alerts for our network, they'll call us and tell us about it. So if it's 2 a.m., things that maybe we wouldn't have been able to see or get alerted on, they have someone who's actually looking at it. So that'll be coming as well. So that's the majority of what we were going to talk about with security. We did want to take a little bit and talk about preparedness in relation to some of the things that we're seeing happen. IT has worked to make sure that we're able to facilitate if we have to move people to alternate work locations. We're ready to help them get, if they need to go to another building in the county, if they have to go to another facility somewhere else, we have equipment and we have resources and the knowledge to help make sure that can happen. Remote worker support. Anyone with a laptop in the county right now has the tools that they need to become a remote worker. So they would have the opportunity to work from home if their manager were to designate them for that. We're going to be going through some training to make sure that they know and understand how to get connected. We have online collaboration and meeting resources. We have some of the things that you guys maybe see other places, like WebEx. We have Microsoft Teams, these different tools that you can use for voice, phone, or voice or web conferencing, video conferencing. We have tools to provide so that people can use those. And we're going to be ready to work with the departments and divisions to work on helping them meet their needs as well. So just a few things. We did want to make sure, reinforce, security is a journey without a final destination. We're never going to be done. We're always going to be working and trying to improve. And we just want to make sure, on a pretty regular basis, you'll probably see something in a capital request, or we'll come and talk about something different, because there's always something new happening. There's new threats that we have to deal with related to security. The best results are those that are created through collaboration and cooperation at all levels of the organization. Really what we're talking about there is making sure that we work with departments and divisions to balance our need to create a secure environment with their ability to do their job. Usually you see that in like a scale or a teeter-totter or something. There's always a balance there. We could create the most secure environment, which might just be sitting there with a computer that's not turned on because it can't get infected then. But that's not going to really help people get their job done. So we just want to make sure that we work with the departments to create an appropriate balance. And one thing that I do want to share, be wary of misinformation. During an event like the coronavirus right now, the bad actors, the hackers, they will use it. There, you will see emails coming out. You'll see, it'll tell you, oh, click here to get your free COVID test, or, you know, oh, just enter your credit card information here and it'll ship to you in 24 hours. And they leverage that. They take advantage of the vulnerabilities that we have. So just be careful. Be very cognizant of what you receive and what you click on, what you respond to. Any questions?
Discussion?
I have a rule that I don't use my county email for anything.
I like that idea.
Never getting in trouble sending something through the county email because I just don't do it.
Absolutely secure. Yeah, right. Funny you should say that. I put out a phishing question. Click for ways to beat the coronavirus, 80% failure. Because everybody is so afraid of it, they'll all click it.
Right?
So, very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you
very
much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. We'll move on then to number 11, the binding resolution of 12 million plus. And Don, you're going to present that. And Patty?
Okay. I'm going to pass these around.
Thank you, Marty.
How fast can you move?
How fast can I move?
Okay. You good?
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so I'll kind of combine the discussion. I believe the first item on your agenda is the resolution for the taxable general obligation refunding bonds on 2020A. And as part of they were two to put together. There's two assignments. Part of the service we provide as your financial advisor, we periodically go out and look at all your outstanding debt to see if there's opportunities for any refunding savings. And we've recently done that. We've looked at all, and you'll see the issues we're looking at are older issues. And the first one is it's a taxable general obligation refunding, and it's taxable for two reasons. So on the first page behind the cover there, we talk about the issues that we've looked at, and it's through 2010D, which is a taxable issue. It was the purpose that it financed at the time was met the taxable financing needs, so it was done as a taxable issue. So it has to be refinanced as taxable. The second one is a 2011B. The reason we've combined this one into the taxable, it's not currently callable, meaning it's not callable within the next 90 days. So, but right now taxable interest rates have been extremely low, so we combined it to look at an advanced refunding and it provides an opportunity for savings. So the 2010D, the interest rates currently on that are 3.55 to 3.75, and the 11B, the interest rates are between 3 and 3.25, and that's why it makes sense to kind of look at those now. So what we've prepared then is an analysis of what those savings could potentially be. And if you jump to page 6, we've got some schedules on here that show the sizing of the issue, the estimated cost. Of course, doing an advance refunding, there's some additional extra fees because the money is put in an escrow account. But on page 8, we anticipate the savings of doing this would be in the neighborhood of $120,000.
How much?
$120,000. And the last page of this schedule just shows you where the markets have been over this 10-year trend. And the issues we're talking about refinancing are back here in 10 and 11. And you can see where rates were then and where they are now. So that's why it just kind of makes sense to do that. However, I want to also mention, as we've seen kind of panic in the stock market in the last few days, our plan on this is to have the county board consider the authorization to proceed on the meeting on Tuesday night, and that we would come back with a competitive sale on April 21st and a final sale. we're still going to operate under that timeline if everyone moves forward with this action. But the last 2 days, because of the volatility in the stock market, we've also seen some volatility in the bond market as well. There, normally we see a flight to quality where people go out of the stock market, go to municipal bonds and treasuries. Right now, there's been a lot of banks that have been dumping their municipal securities, and it's caused some real wild swings in the bond market. So we're going to continue to monitor that. Right now, a week ago, if we had been in the market selling this, it would have been a killing savings. Now, today, not so much. So we'll continue to monitor it, and we wouldn't take it to market if we thought the savings were going to move away from you and not be realized. So at this point, we would say as soon as things settle down a little bit, we'd probably be looking at the savings or perhaps even better. But if something moves away from us, then we would put this on hold. So again, your action today would be, if you're wanting to look at doing this, to consider the resolution that's been prepared for you and make a recommendation to the board, and I'll be back on Tuesday night to share this information with the board.
Move to approve.
Second. Wait, are you doing both of them?
Yep.
Well, and just to kind of summarize, the second one's a little larger issue, but that they're currently funding 2011, 2012, 2012, and 2013. The interest rates that they're currently at are there. That savings is about, just under $150,000, but the same promise as well.
And you think those savings will be good even if the bond market shows rates that are even lower than they were today?
What we did with these is they were based upon sales that were done in January, and we added some interest hedging on top of that. So the market is lower. It was lower a week ago than it was in January. And now we've seen this volatility, and we've seen some uptick. So it's probably not that it's erased everything, but it's kind of been a little bit out of the ordinary. Very out of the ordinary. So, I suspect that this is going to settle down and that we're going to see things kind of settle back into where they were. But again, I think the savings if a week ago would have been lots better than what I showed you on these two documents here today. So we're hoping that things will settle back down, and by the time we get to doing that sale in April, they'll be back there. But we won't sell it if we don't think that there'll be savings for it.
And you think those are reasonable figures, that 126 plus and the 148?
I think they're reasonable, yes.
Remind us, why were these taxable?
I looked that up, and I can't remember what I thought it was your pension, but it wasn't.
Yes, I thought it was. Okay. Yes, that's what my research showed.
Okay, then it was when you refinance your pension pension obligations, it had to be done tax.
Yes. John?
Yes, bonds are 20 years, so if we're doing this like almost halfway through these, are these refunding bonds that we're issuing 20 years, or are they going to be just the difference?
We keep it at the same. We're not extending it any longer. It's the same duration, and we're structuring it so they have a level basis on an annual basis. So it doesn't increase the life of it.
So
bonds.
What is the life of these?
They vary a little bit. Each one of these varies. The B issue would be paid off in 2032. But if you look at page 8 of that, you'll see a lot of this is in the early years, so some of that debt would have been paid off in 2023. So unless you had the cash to pay it off early, the refinancing does make sense. So in the B, it's probably the 13. Some of these were notes, some are bonds, some were 20 years, some were 10. So the refinancing of the front end is the short ones that would have been paid off sooner, and then the back end is stretching out longer. With the same would hold true, I think, with the A issue. There's a few maturities in 21 and 22 that are, the principals are larger, so they're paying off some of the shorter overall issues. But overall, we're not extending any one of the issues any longer.
So they're both 2032, or one is 2032?
One is 2032, the other one is 2031.
Discussion? Yes.
Did you approve?
Yeah,
I need a motion.
Yeah,
second.
Yeah.
Anyway. Further discussion, anyone?
I mean, I like the chance to save money.
The other thing I may add, it saves administrative tracking, because now we're taking all those issues and combining them into two separate ones, so as far as the work that the staff has to maintain and monitor, it simplifies their life.
It's easier. Well, we're looking at monetary savings.
How long we've been with you guys?
You know, honestly, a while.
We have every confidence.
Mike would have probably known better than me how long it's been, but
I have every confidence you'll get the best for us, because you always have.
All right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, thank you.
Great, see you Tuesday.
Very good.
Thanks for
coming. So now we're on the Human Services Resolution on donations.
Anytime to save us money.
And who's going to...
So, before we are requesting a resolution to authorize us to accept and spend donations. So, right now, we do receive donations for Human Services. We get $1,000 from the city going towards National Night Out. We get some money from judges for reunification luncheon that we do for foster families, or they're the families that reunified. And we get donations for, we do a casual for the cause, so where employees can donate to dress in jeans, and then we use that towards a food drive and school clothes for foster children. We also get donations for veterans towards stand down. They use that for food and entertainment for veterans, and the town hall meeting, they may use that for food. So we are looking for authorization to actually accept this and expend it without having to go in front of the county board, and for John, the director of Human Services, to be able to spend that money.
So that's the policy now, is that the director spends it?
Yes. No, right now it's to go in front of the county board.
So oh, now it comes before the
exactly.
board.
Exactly. And this follows Brookside. So Brookside already has one. So this follows the same language that Brookside currently has in place.
Discussion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Yes, Jen.
So what if somebody wants to donate $70,000?
Then we'd have to come in front of the board.
So the only thing you're saying in this is anything less than 50, you guys can spend.
Correct.
As long as there's no levy impact.
Correct.
Any levy impact has to come to the board.
So what's the problem with the way we do it now?
It's just more time consuming. We'd have to come in front of the board, you know, for like a $500 donation, a $1,000 donation, and it's just easier if we can just spend it on what the person who donated for wanted to. So like National Night Out, we would come to you, we'd have to come to you every time.
Well, I don't remember this resolution coming from to the board like to spend some money like that, do we?
No, but we're supposed to be.
So you're spending it now without authorization?
Is it tape?
Sort of.
I just found out, and but we use it for what it's designated for, though, too.
Let me clarify that. So right now, the county is allowed to take monies in for a specific purpose and expend it for that, but right now there's nothing that allows. So if somebody wanted to donate $1,000 and say veterans can use it for whatever they want, and veterans currently that would have to go to the county board.
But it's not. I mean, that's a concern, I think.
And right now, what
but
I'm saying
it's not
is
coming to the board, and it's supposed to be.
No,
there hasn't been donations like that. The ones that have been coming to them, the ones that she rattled off, were ones that had a specific purpose.
I see.
And this would take care of ones that wouldn't have a specific purpose.
John?
Isn't the Finance Committee authorized to act under $5,000?
Good point, I thought so.
I thought I read that somewhere.
I think that's accurate.
So therefore, I think if it's over 5,000, I'd like to know about it anyway.
Yeah, I don't know where 50,000 came. Everything you've said was 3,000 and less.
We,
I think that mimics Brookside's line.
That's exactly okay. Brookside's.
Okay. Yeah, but Brookside would get larger donations like that. I can't receive.
I could see that veterans might get a
veterans might get potentially
at the cost or something.
Well, we have funds at Brookside that makes Buick fund that they're authorized to take any interest that's earned in that fund and use it for whatever they want, right? Mm-hmm. Or buy TVs or whatever they do.
I guess I would like it to say anything over the number we agree on then comes to the county board. So there's no ambiguity since we haven't been seeing them to this point. I think that would totally finish off what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
I guess I would rather know if somebody made that large of a donation so we can acknowledge it on the board floor. And you know, I mean, I don't, 50,000 is a lot of money. I'm just shooting from the hip. I don't have a horse in the race. Mm-hmm. I'm not donating $50,000. So you know, but I.
But you're doing 60.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I think we should at least put that in there so that we know it comes before the board since it hasn't been. And I understand 50 matching Brookside, but that's a big number to me.
So what is your proposal
here? I'll make it 10,000 and put in there that anything over that has to come to the county board.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion.
I mean, does that make sense to you, or do you?
It doesn't matter.
I mean, you're bringing it out.
Yeah, I mean, we just used 50,000 because that was
right.
Said before.
So let me ask a question. Yeah. What do you normally spend in a year? Ballpark.
I would say maybe 5-10,000. Okay, now,
so that encompasses what you're saying.
We did get a request from somebody from. That they wanted to put the division of aging disability in their will. How much that will amount to if time may pass, I don't know. You know, so we could have items like that, but.
But they're few and far between. Right?
Oh yeah, most of our donations are non-monetary.
Yeah. All right, further discussion on the amendment, which is 10 amount of,
just yeah. Placeholder.
Hold on 1 second. Yep. So what I'm saying is then, 10,000 is usually your normal allotment that you spend a year, so you wouldn't have to come to us.
Very soon.
Once we get this going, 10,000, you'd be fine with that. Yep.
But I thought it was 10,000 from one source.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, if they get, you know, 15 $1,000 donations, they don't have to come to us.
No.
That's fine.
That's
fine. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm clarifying it for me too.
Right.
Yeah.
Just working through the numbers. Here. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
So just so that we know what we're voting on, 50 becomes the 10.
Yes.
And anything above 10 must come to the county board.
Right, since that hadn't been done before, I think we should put it in there.
Yeah, no, I'm not arguing with that. I just want to have the language tightened up here.
I have a question.
Yeah, yes.
I have a question. Since this already went through Human Services, does it have to go back to them now?
Yes.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay, so
we're not
going to
put this on the agenda for Tuesday night then, right?
Probably not.
Okay.
Do we have any pressing
donations? It's not a critical time frame anyway.
No. On the amendment, further discussion? All right. On the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes? On the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Right, I'll make a motion to approve.
Wake up.
Second.
Yeah.
John seconded.
Okay. Anything further? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
So now we go back. Go back to Human Services for their. Yeah. And if they come up with 15, we can go back and forth, and maybe we can go to 20 or.
All right. Thank you. You're going to bring it back then to the Human Services. All right.
They might get a big donation. I don't know.
We've got two bond resolutions coming around as well as the Human Services. Do we have any reports?
Yes, we have a general fund year-end forecast. Oh, Clara, go first, sorry. You go ahead first.
Okay.
Ladies first.
Good evening, again. Just wanted to update you from Human Resources. We have been responding, of course, to the COVID-19, otherwise known as coronavirus issue. Of course, this afternoon, a state of emergency was declared in Kenosha County. So we have been working with the county executive's office and our division and department heads. Just so you're aware, it was mentioned in the IT presentation, the COOPCOGS, or the Continuity of Operations Plans. All divisions were asked by the county executive at the end of last year to make sure those were updated, so that was great timing, because those will be referred to and implemented as necessary. We have given direction to leadership to begin telecommuting where feasible and appropriate. So they work with IT to ensure that laptops have what they need when people can, in fact, conduct their work from home. They will do that as appropriate. We are also suspending our ANS waiting period for influenza and COVID-19 illness situations. We want to ensure that employees do the right thing and do not report to work if they are ill, and that they take the steps to get tested and treatment. We are also asking for folks to quarantine if they engage in personal travel, and we're suspending business travel as well. We're also asking that meetings be held virtually when they can be, teleconferencing, Skype, whatever means they may be able to do that. And then not engaging in things like shaking hands and engaging in good personal hygiene. But most significantly, employees should not report to work if they are ill or showing any symptoms of influenza or COVID-19.
Do they need a doctor's excuse for that, or are we just going to have a lot of people be ill? Hey, it's a valid question.
It is absolutely a valid question. From what we understand right now, and the pressure that can be put on the healthcare system under these circumstances, the suspension of the waiting period for ANS will be for those confirmed cases. So if someone has been tested and confirmed, we want people to take those steps. We believe that healthcare officials will send people for testing if they believe they are showing symptoms of the disease. Infection. But we do want employees to err on the side of caution.
Where do people get tests?
That may be a better question for the health department, but as I understand it, testing is available much more widely than it was, for example, last week. But I believe things like the community health clinic are testing, the clinics and hospitals, and the health department.
Health department?
I believe they are.
The individual doctor's office?
I don't have an answer to that.
Somebody's shaking their head.
I know of one doctor that is.
You're
the others too.
You were negative. You were negative, Jim, or
somebody I know.
Somebody knows.
I'm gonna go over here.
That's right. I see you leave, Jim.
Well, you're saying testing is available for that virus right now?
Yes.
Okay, so. From what I've been reading and everything, there isn't a whole lot of testing going on, right? So if somebody claims this thing and then they turn up.
Don't go by everything you hear.
I understand that.
Call your personal doctor.
I don't listen to the President of the United States.
Tell you the truth.
Daddy, big fella.
And again, I would defer to the health department, but from what I understand, testing is much more extensive, and it is ongoing now.
And this can be identified in that. This can be identified at that test, right?
Yeah.
So if you go over to the health department and ask for a test, they'll give you one. Is that what you're saying?
I believe it's referral right now. by physicians or clinics. You know, they refer you to get tested. It's not a just walk in and be tested.
No.
We would go through testing.
But they don't have an answer immediately, right? Isn't there a period of time?
Like 24 to 48
hours. An incubator. Yeah.
We shouldn't have hugged when you came in.
I didn't hug you.
Oh, dude. I would never hug anyone.
Things
but
change.
But I do have my file in my pocket.
Just Purex?
That's good. We can put it in our hands for, you know.
We want it to be at least 60% alcohol for hand sanitizer. we're working very closely with our Division of Health. Things change rapidly. We're trying to be as nimble as possible to limit exposure.
My understanding is that Brookside is shutting down any visitation and any activities as of tomorrow morning.
Brookside?
It's just employees coming to work.
Brookside?
Brookside, yes.
Yeah.
And it's based, I think, on Jim's emergency declaration. So they.
So will you be holding board meetings there, or will you be holding them off-site?
Just use JK.
Probably on
site.
Oh, seriously.
Well, it's next month, so we'll see what happens. Yeah, I just got a call from Bob before I came down here. So.
Oh my goodness.
Got a call
so when you say just going back, you said that health department on referral from a doctor.
So.
My understanding is people with symptoms are recommended to call their doctor, and then I believe from there doctors are referring them to get tested. Whether they're done in a doctor's office or sent to a lab or a clinic to be tested.
Anything else?
No, I just wanted to update you.
Ed's jealous.
Yes.
Ed's jealous.
Yes.
I passed out a 2019 general fund year-end forecast.
Year-end forecast.
The second, the last one, or I should say that's the last one before we do our year-end closeout resolution next month.
It
dropped a little bit, but it's starting to kind of solidify in the $1.1 million range. Some of the material movers sales tax, our December sales tax number came in a little lower than I thought it would come in. So we are actually flat for November, December for 18 and 19.
It's going to get lower.
So
that's the actual December.
Good thing we got online.
Really?
So it could be that just a timing thing. So it could be that more December receipts flowed into January. In about 2 weeks, we'll find that out. But.
Oh,
so that's the reason for why that dropped $160,000. Health insurance on the bottom side increased by $143,000. That was a negative, but that's a final number now. On the flip side, workers' compensation insurance surplus, that increased just short of $200,000. Decrease in tax delinquencies, that improved another $113,000. And then miscellaneous went down 102. So overall, down 37,000. I wanted to point out that we always use the general fund expenditures estimate number, that $70 million number that's in the box at the bottom. Now, that is a 2% increase from 2018 to 2019. That's an estimate. What I do is I go back 5 years and do an average increase over the prior 5 years. But let's say if our general fund expenditures get solidified in the next month or so, and that those come in a little higher than 2%, then the percentage would actually go down. But if the expenditures are less than 2%, then that would increase that percentage. So I just wanted to lay the groundwork for next month. So if I come in at 27, and the number actually ticked up a little bit, then you'll know why.
Yes.
I just wanted to comment, dovetailing off of what Clara said, some of these things that are going into effect here in the county will have cost involved to them. And with all of the volatility in the marketplace and people not sure if they're going to have income, things like our sales tax revenue, we won't see a difference. January is going to be good. I mean, what we collect in March is from January, so we're going to not see this impact for a few months. To some extent, sales tax revenue will go down, and there's no way to predict how much, but if people are at home and they are afraid to go into stores and they're ordering from Amazon,
we're still collecting sales tax revenue on those things. So again, it's really difficult to predict what kind of impact there will be and what the long-term impact will be. If this is a short-lived issue, I don't expect we'll see an increase in property tax delinquencies because people will have time to get things together before they pay their taxes next year. But if this is a longer term thing, we could see a decrease in that. And again, some of our expenditures that we budgeted may end up higher than we expected. This is early in the year. There's plenty of time for things to work themselves out. But I just wanted to give you the heads up that those are a couple of potential issues.
When did that sales tax for online, when did that kick in?
October 2018.
Okay, so we got a full year of it almost, right? Mm-hmm.
Do you know how, when we get our sales tax numbers, do you have that broken down to how much we get from
where?
Internet, or I mean,
that information
from online
is
sales?
Available, but it is also confidential. No, I do not, I cannot get what is from online sales.
Right.
But the state does put out like categories, so what was motor vehicles, or what was printing and duplication, I mean unusual, or retail. And actually they do have a non-store retail, which is in many cases internet sales. I'm not sure exactly how they treat sales from Walmart, which may have a retail location, and online sales, if there's a way for them to segregate those.
Who makes it confidential?
The state.
But by what state? By what rule?
Their rule. We have to sign a confidentiality agreement.
Did anybody figure out why?
It's weird.
It is, yeah, but we have to do it every year. We have to renew it, and we have to update it if we want anyone added or different. I mean, it automatically would expire for someone who is being taken off, but for someone to be added, we have to sign the agreement.
That's odd. That would be confidential.
It might be in this. It might be statutory.
We're having open record law.
Yeah.
All right. That's strange. Finance?
We're lucky our sales.
Nope. Anything else to report from the other categories?
I would just also say that Barna mentioned this, but in April we will have the closeout resolution, so we'll have that before you have the next meeting.
Any sort of thing further to come before the committee?
All move.
I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Well,
no. The longer we stay, the more chances we can catch that.
Oh, God.
Exactly.